Hello. You're listening to Open Source Sex with Violet Blue, and I am broadcasting live. It's Tuesday at about 11 o'clock in the morning. I am in DuBose Park in San Francisco, also known as Dog Do Park, because this is where everyone in the Castro neighborhood comes to walk their dogs. And you're considered lucky if you can actually walk across the lawn and not step in anything. I'm pretty lucky. I found a really beautiful spot in the shade under a really big tree. And you might hear the sound of dogs barking, or maybe some kids screaming, or maybe even some people yelling to their dogs, and Muni going by, but I do promise that if anyone yells really loud at their dogs, I'll stop and re-record over it. But it's just a gorgeous, gorgeous day in San Francisco. It's like low 70s, completely sunny. We're getting our summer before the actual summer happens, which is when we get our fog, and then after the summer is over, we get another beautiful summer in the fall. That's actually one of our big secrets here in San Francisco, is that we have sort of a bookended, beautiful, warm, clear weather on either side of the actual summer months. So, at any rate, I haven't done a podcast in a while because I've just been going out of my mind crazy working on books and dealing with book deadlines. I've been working on Best Women's Erotica 2006, which I got over 200 submissions for, and if you read my blog, you've probably heard me ranting and raving about it. And I'm really glad that I'm almost through with that. All I have to do now is finalize the submissions and write the introduction, which is actually no small feat, because it's a pretty amazing work. And writing about saying something about the state of women's erotica and women's sexuality is no small thing, for sure. But at any rate, I wanted to read something to you today that I wrote, which, oh my god, people are completely walking by and looking at me like I'm a total dork, but it's because I'm sitting here with my little white iBook under a tree with the biggest, dorkiest microphone you've ever seen in your life, just actually praying that birds don't crap on my iBook, but but there are bugs landing on the screen, which is kind of amazing. Well, I'll try to look entertaining for people as they walk by. And if they actually listen to what I'm about to read you, they'll be pretty entertained. The piece that I want to read is actually something that I read very recently at Writers with Drinks, which was a benefit for Other Magazine. And I was really nervous before I read it because I seldom actually read anything that's my own. I usually read something that belongs to someone else, which is a really clever foil for actually putting someone else's work in front of me. And but this time I read something of mine, and I got a good reception on it. And cute dog running up to me. This is for a book that's going to be coming out in the fall that I was asked to contribute a piece for. And the book is it's called Everything You Know About Sex is Wrong, and it's a collection of essays from a bunch of different writers. It's being put together by Russ Kick, who is an amazingly talented editor. I was so excited to be asked to be in the book because I just love his whole disinformation series. I think it's really exciting. So I wrote this piece that I'm not sure what I'm going to call, but it's the working title for it was How Fake Sex Became Real, Porn as Sexual Disinformation. I perched on the edge of a king-size four-poster bed in a rented mansion on Mulholland Drive. The combination of bright, hot studio lights, the glare of cameras, crew and director, and windows shut tight to keep out external sound conspired to make the air thick, humid, and stifling. On my right, the male performer's exposed, sweaty, and disappointingly flaccid crotch smelled like feet. Between us sat a naked 19-year-old wearing nothing except clear plastic 6-inch heels and L.A. trendy, skunk-striped, frosted blonde hair. Porn has always struck me as the kind of genre that in the right circumstances could produce a film so powerful and culturally relevant that it could change the way the world views sex and independent filmmaking. Free of the rules and taboos placed on mainstream media, and no rating system to worry its pretty little head about, I always thought porn would be the birthplace of the next Bertolucci. As a professional porn reviewer, a female pro-porn pundit, and porn lover, I started my porn-watching career by placing a great deal of faith in the human capacity to create, to make art, to break the rules of sex foisted on us proles who were just waiting for the chance to break free of the shackles of oppression that bound us in our boring little sexual cages. Faced with an exciting question, porn proved to me over the course of 8 years and over 1,000 films that it could only respond in the dullest possible way. To me, the greatest mystery of sex remained how something so hot and arousing in fantasy could have absolutely nothing in common with the actual hot sex once put on screen. I certainly expressed physical enthusiasm every once in a while for a stocky cock and a greedy mouth, but while screening the latest copy of Beverly Hills 90210 Ho or The Sopranos Number 6, I'd often find myself thinking that I should rent some hot porn so I can jack off, completely forgetting that I'm watching porn at all. Porn, known for mafia ties, graft and menswear, check fraud, and fluorescent lighting, took my hopes and dreams of cinema verite fucking al fresco and turned it into my own personal freakish experiment of boredom. By my third professional review, each film looked more and more like it was made by someone desperate to create time capsules of 1981. Somehow, somewhere, someone made a rule that all porn videos must contain 6 or 7 sex scenes, and that each sex scene must repeat the same sex positions, duration, and execution. It took me 30 minutes and 2 AA batteries to figure out the Mad Libs-inspired formula, and then glaze over to consider the date of my next pedicure. I had a sneaking suspicion that Rain Man was running the porn industry, counting reverse cowgirls and doggy mish oral sequences, in between rocking himself in the corner and telling the directors, "Uh-oh, 15 minutes to Wapner." It was no wonder to me why porn performers always seemed to be thinking about anything except what they were doing. Granted, when I press play, I know I'm not going to jack off to lovemaking, but I'd sometimes at least like to see like-making. Puffy lips, polished knobs with the precision of bottle-topping machines in a factory. Close-ups on genitals go beyond the actual human capacity of seeing, creating panoplies of indistinguishable meat rubbing together in ways that would make Karen Finley cry plagiarism. Abattoir sounds of fake orgasm compete with screeching saxophones and synth beats to conspire against my sanity and irritate my neighbor's dogs. Ropes of semen shoot onto flinching or bizarrely grinning faces like a child's prank, the bottle rocket aimed at the teacher. And the positions seem like a cruel Cirque du Soleil masterpiece, though they often do serve as a weekly reminder to attend my yoga class. So in my years of sex ed training, porn reviewing, several books on sex and sexuality, and a willingness to talk about it on camera landed me in Porn Valley, I was excited to have my first real live on-set experience. I brought my digital camera and extra batteries and had a list of questions for the performers and director. But it wasn't just any porn set. The highest profile men's magazine had flown me to Los Angeles to make a how-to sex ed segment based on my 2 most popular books. When I got off the plane, I discovered that the wealthy gentleman's glossy outsourced all their film ventures and were as cheap as the day was long. The first day of filming in their tiny, stuffy offices went fine, and I did a series of basic anatomy descriptions in a talking head introduction to the segment. They told me the next day we'd be on location to film the sex scenes, and that they had porn performers coming in for the shoot. The setting was that I was a sex counselor for a couple who wanted to learn more about oral sex. It was to be the most explicit segment the magazine's cable TV franchise had done yet. They'd had to get personal approval from the famous billionaire owner, and they were cleverly cloaking the pornographic demonstrations in an educational wrapper. I was nervous. Perhaps the problem started before I'd even arrived, when the producer was too shy to interview performers for the shoot. The outsourcing company had never done porn, but due to the sexually explicit nature of the segment, had to hire porn performers. We needed to show sex techniques, not porn sex, so they wanted me to supervise and coach the performers. At the same time, the biggest HIV scare to hit the porn industry in many years was all over the mainstream and adult news outlets, proclaiming an industry-wide shutdown until all tests were in. Unlike the gay porn industry that condemns and forbids unsafe sex practices, for the most part, the straight porn industry insists that safer sex and condom use would doom their businesses to failure, claiming that condoms take away from the, quote, realism, end quote, of their work. After the first public HIV scare in 1997, a few renegade performers got together and founded a testing clinic and nonprofit attempting to make HIV testing, at minimum, socially mandatory for performers. Even with such positive strides, an HIV breakout occurred. The leading adult industry magazine ran an issue with a sexy nurse on the cover proclaiming killer sex and ran opinion pieces on both sides of the testing debate. As if it was debatable, like drinking lye can kill you versus drinking lye is only something you need to worry about if you're gay. The next morning started out sunny and warm, and as the production assistant and I entered the mansion, I realized that I'd seen the rooms of this house in some of the high-class porn films I'd screened. I noted the credit card on the glass coffee table in the otherwise spotless house, which was for sale, and a ratty-haired blonde asleep on the couch in the game room. I quickly snapped a photo of the blonde, and the flash had her bolt upright in an instant, not asleep after all. The performers arrived half an hour later looking like they'd just come from an all-night porn party. The female was a tattooed brunette who was a recognizable name in the porn world, and he was a tall, blonde surfer boy type, and they both told us they were a real-life couple that did porn together. I was elated, and though they seemed standoffish, I knew that once we had a chance to talk, they'd see that I was a knowledgeable, supportive porn fan. We'd chat and gossip about the porn business, laughing and making fun of long fingernails and lesbian porn. I looked forward to working with the sensitive, artistic temperament of performers who'd see the educational vision of the segment and conspire with me to explicitly convey a slightly subversive yet sex-positive message. But until then, I couldn't help but notice that no matter what the male performer was doing, his hand always seemed to stray to his crotch, grabbing his cock, his balls, or something. I wondered if porn people develop their own kind of nervous tics. For instance, before leaving a room, he'd grab at his crotch. I wanted to suggest the doorknob, as that's what worked best for the rest of us. The crew's first task was to shoot the couple's opening scene, entering the house. Throughout all five takes, the cameraman had to carefully position the camera to avoid the formerly sleeping blonde as she obsessively scrubbed a spot on the carpet with a sponge and saucepan filled with soap and water. Next, it was time for me to explain sexual anatomy using the brunette as a live model and point out my descriptions to the camera. I sat on the bed and waited for the actress to take off her clothes, which took all of 5 seconds due to the fact that she wore no underwear, but then had to wait as she searched her belongings and asked everyone on the crew if they had any baby wipes. "I think I need 'em," she rasped. Finally, she flopped onto the bed and spread her legs and motioned to a braille pattern of sores and scabs on her shaved vulva and inner thighs. In a Suzanne Plachette voice, she croaked, "Fucking razor burn." I took stock of the bumpy terrain, like some planet best discovered only by some sort of remote-controlled machine, and carefully pointed out anatomy to the camera in my best teaching voice. I focused really, really hard on avoiding skin contact, visualizing at one point that her pussy was made of hot lava or skin-melting acid. After the director yelled, "Cut," I walked over to him and thoughtfully whispered, "You know, I'm a bit concerned about the sores." "You can see those too? Shit!" He put a stop to the filming. Then he told the brunette why we stopped and why we couldn't use her for the shoot, sending her into a screeching, wig-throwing rage. Her boyfriend obsessively yanked on his dick and quietly told us he was going to stay and do it for the money, assuring us he could get another girl no problem. He fished his cell phone out of his pocket with his free hand. "What about the HIV moratorium?" I asked him. "Oh, that's nothing." Then he mentioned a company name that I can't tell you and said, "So-and-so is sending out 200 girls a day. Their drivers can have one over here in an hour. You want..." And then he named the name of a girl who is a very famous, very awarded starlet. "I think she's free this morning. Let me make a few calls." So we did. 700 miles from home, I talked about sex with the crew and took turns playing Crockett and Tubbs with the cameraman in the spacious, abhorrently tacky Miami Vice mansion. There were no waste baskets or trash cans in the entire house. We found a condom wrapper under a dresser, creeping each other out with suggestions as to where the contents now lie. 2 hours later, a pretty, plain-looking blonde arrived. She was, in fact, beautiful, soft, and naturally lovely, not hard-edged and thin like the brunette. I was relieved that no one had arrived with some sort of porn look, to which years of porn watching had made me violently allergic. It had become impossible for me to enjoy porn starring living blow-up dolls, every breast a perfect chemical melon, pendulous miracles of science. If their boobs were filled with air, you could tie a string to an ankle and fly them. Their tanned and toughened skin always looked like a car commercial, interior shots, and threesomes at a glance could trick me into seeing an epileptic man in a fit with a hard-on, bookended by a pair of overstuffed Naugahyde recliners. The director whisked our blonde upstairs to the bedroom, had her take her clothes off, and asked me to come in. She was waiting for me on the bed, with her legs spread, looking at the ceiling. The director indicated her splayed crotch and asked me, "Is she okay?" I glanced at her and waited for a second, wondering how David Lynch had managed to become director of my life. I told them, "She's fine." We started over from the beginning, and this time the blonde performers flirted like mad, dropping names about industry contacts and bantering about sex. She was a rising star. He was hoping to get a rise. Back on the bed, about to point out anatomy for the second time, but still careful not to touch, she whispered to me in a baby voice, "I thought you were going to say I was ugly." I told her no. The last girl had sores. She looked at her new paramour, his hand absently massaging his scrotum, and exhaled, "Ah." I explained clitoral anatomy to the camera, my fingers careful not to graze her kryptonite pussy, and she was perplexed. How did you learn all this stuff? I told her I'd done around 70 hours of sex ed training courses, and that I'd been pretty surprised to learn about the clitoris, too. I wondered what else I should be telling her about sex in the seconds I had between takes, and whether she'd listen, or care, or see something shiny. The next segment was male genital anatomy. The male performer took his clothes off, and I wondered if he was going to need baby wipes, too. The blonde kept flirting with him, and he played pocket pool, now minus the pocket. "Wait," he told us, "I gotta get a hard-on for this part." His genital gropes were getting rough, beating, and the crew and I exchanged nervous glances. I told the room, "No, we don't need a hard cock yet. It's okay." I proceeded with my anatomy lesson, continually telling him to stop touching, to move his hands away. Between takes, he told me in a wide-eyed whisper, "It won't get hard." The blonde giggled and assured him, "I'll help you." We changed scene and moved onto the bed to film a series of techniques from my books. My role was to explain each technique to the camera, then off-camera I'd tell the performers what to do, and the couple would demonstrate. Between takes, I'd be marooned on the bed with the performers, and they'd chat with me, while lights were adjusted and crew assisted the director and cameraman. The blonde's voice was high and whispery, like pink cotton filigree full of air. She told me, "He's leaving her for me," her eyes shining. She also told me about the toilet paper stuffed in her vagina. Every once in a while, the performers asked if they needed to keep pretending they were a couple. I asked them how work was going during the moratorium. They both bragged about how they'd never had so much work in their lives and were making a lot of money. "Everyone's really busy, and a lot of companies are filming more to fill in the gaps," they assured me. I said, trying to be cool, "So, is everyone just using condoms or something?" They looked at me like I was a foreign exchange student, puzzled their faces, and told me, "No." The male performer could not get an erection. The techniques were mostly foreplay-oriented, yet the afternoon dragged on. The female performer grew bored. "This softcore shit is boring," she told us, her captive audience, with a smile. "I really want to fuck now." Her impatience grew, and she was speaking to the whole crew now, not just me anymore. "I did this awesome scene yesterday. It was so hot. The guy in the scene fucked this girl in the ass. Then he held it over my face and dripped the cum into my mouth so I could drink it. I loved it." She smiled at me as if I was cued to say, "Wow, that's so awesome," as if she wasn't making gruesome boasts about felching. She simply didn't know that her standards of awesome experiences, like her sexual practices, were devoid of anything one might consider polite conversation among strangers. Silence descended on the room, but the male performer picked up the conversational thread. "Who was shooting it?" he asked, smacking his dick. Unlike the rest of the non-porn people in the room, I knew that for porn performers, sucking things out of a stranger's asshole was as everyday as slurping froth off a latte. Although admittedly it might be a latte seasoned with hepatitis, herpes, HBV, and a bacterial infection. No chocolate sprinkles for me. The list of unsafe and for many people distasteful practices common in porn is lengthy and ever-changing. Besides the incredibly trendy ass-to-mouth fetish, there's bottle fucking, bile drooling, throat gagging to the point of nausea, eye and nasal ejaculation, anal-to-vaginal penetration, anal penetration without lubricant, multiple male cream pies, internal ejaculation, and of course, good old sex with multiple strangers without condoms. The blonde was just like the rest of the world in that she'd never learned about any kind of sex except reproductive information. Those of us lucky enough to get sex ed in school don't ever see real, non-illustrated genitals until we find our stepdad's playboys or playgirls. Our first glimpses of porn are filled with wonder, horror, curiosity, and dread. Sometimes arousal. Like the blonde, everyone's real sexual education comes from a combination of our own scary and exciting experiences and porn. It wasn't difficult to imagine the blonde as a vessel for anatomy instruction for her thousands of wanking viewers, but it was chilling to think that people were getting sex ed from her movies. In fact, certain kinds of brutal sex, what I call fear factor sex, have become so trendy, and since popular, widespread, among industry insiders, that they've become standard sexual practices in porn, giving the porn community the misguided impression that specialized brutality is the norm in bedrooms across America. Porn, as our most vital vehicle of sex ed, has become the most viral form of sexual disinformation. If used porn as a guide to real sex, you'd think that young women liked having their anuses held open and spit into, that girls had earth-shattering sexual experiences when you choke them and slap their tits, and that large objects can easily be shoved in virgin assholes sans lube. Mind you, the brutality that I talk about has nothing to do with actual SM practices which involve consent and all sorts of other very mature things. These things are never made clear in porn these days. They just don't understand. The director asked everyone to get back to work, opting to film a few more cunnilingus scenes. "Okay," I commanded the male performer, with no small amount of internal giggling. "Lick!" He took this as his cue to loudly spit on her vulva. The crew and I groaned. The director yelled, "Cut!" And I said, "No, don't do that, please." "I thought you told me to spit." "No, I told you to lick her." My last shreds of irony ebbed. I didn't want to explain to him that genital spitting was a common porn practice, but it wasn't to the rest of the world. Who were the ones that would be watching the show? Most people didn't hawk loogies on each other's genitals unless their sex play was pretty evolved, and then usually for some pretty different reasons. Just lick, okay? Eventually, we were way over the rental time on the mansion, and still no erection, despite the brutal beating Surfer Boy's cock and balls had sustained, and the fervent cocksucking the blonde was administering in the adjacent bathroom. Finally, the blonde had had enough fluffing, which, she reminded us several times, she was doing for free. Gratis. She clop-clopped into the room, naked, save for her lucite stripper heels. Everyone tried to look busy with something, and I busied myself attempting to suction a dildo demo model onto the hardwood floor next to my chair. She announced, "We need a hard dick." She surveyed the room. Each of the men seemed to be visibly concentrating on what he was doing. But she had my full attention. She turned around to the cameraman, busily changing tape on the gaudy faux-finish fireplace in the corner of the room. "What about you?" He focused on the task at hand while trying to shrink into the hearth. Naked, hands on hips, she cornered him. "I'll suck your cock, then we'll have a hard dick." The cameraman demurred and declined without looking up from the task at hand. "What the fuck?" she asked the room, in which I was the only female. But she didn't see me. I was invisible, but she was the elephant in the room. The production assistant dragged a heavy light out of the room by himself, down the hall and out of sight. With one man left, she asked the director, "How about you? I'll suck your dick and make it nice and hard." No, that's okay." "What the fuck?" she yelled at all of us. "Am I not pretty enough?" I escaped when they ordered the Viagra. Well, hopefully I didn't have to edit that too crazily. I managed to almost capture the noon air raid siren that usually goes off here in San Francisco. And a couple of dogs came running over and almost drooled all over my iBook, which that was a narrow miss. But I hope you liked the piece. It was, as I said, it was pretty well received when I first read it. It needs some editing. I think I might rename it Fear Factor Porn, because I kind of like that. I think that kind of fits it a little bit better. Everything in that story is true. Every single horrifying little detail is true, and I really just had to write it down. If you read my blog, you'll know that I'm referencing being on Sexcetera, and I can't really, of course, name the name of the magazine or the show or the people that were in the show or anything like that, because I don't like lawsuits, but it was a pretty crazy experience, and I've had a lot of crazy experiences like that as a porn reviewer. And I hope to write them all down soon and do something exciting with them. Anyway, I'm blathering. It's a beautiful day, so I should get my butt over to the cafe that's a block from here with Wi-Fi and upload this. And again, I hope the sounds of dogs and Muni going by and everything wasn't too crazy for you while you were listening today. A couple of people have been watching me do this the entire time I've been sitting here. And hopefully they're not going to stalk me later or follow me to the cafe or, you know, ask if I could sing in their band or something like that, because they don't really want to hear me sing. Anyway, thanks for listening to Open Source Sex. I really appreciate that you're still hanging in there with me with my extremely inconsistent broadcasting schedule. And if this is your first podcast of mine or audio file that you're listening to, definitely visit my website, tinynibbles.com, and check out the other audio stuff I've been doing there, because there's a whole cornucopia of a bunch of different things I've been working on, as well as all my other crazy, insane projects. All right, I hope you have a day as great as the one I'm having. Thanks for listening.